No further ado, you guys are in for a treat tonight. This gentleman sitting up here to my left happens to be my sponsor, okay? And he celebrated 48 years clean and sober on April 1st, okay? And so, he definitely has what I want. I always share with you guys, I said, it's like in sports, if you want to get good, how do you get good? You play up. You play with the guys that are better than you are, that have been doing it longer. Same thing in recovery. You want to get good in recovery, you play up. You play with the people that came before us, that's got the time, that's walked through life and knows how to do the deal. All right? So with no further ado, son of New York, please help me welcome Dion.
I'm an alcoholic and an addict. My name's Dion.
Dion.
48 years. Yeah, I'm getting old. I'm getting old. I came in when I was 28, so I'm, do the math, 70. I'm going to be 77 in July. So, and I know I'm getting old. I saw this beautiful girl today, and I'm thinking, her grandmother must be hot. That's where I'm at. So they tell you to talk about what you were like, what happened, and what you're like now. But first I want to just mention that the guys who talk, like Lewis and Tommy, was talking about surrender, like the idea of keep fighting yourself. You know, it's like, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like that deep surrender set me free. It really set me free. I don't know, Mike was talking about the women. I'm glad you mentioned it. You kind of reinforced my belief system here, you know, because you could get into these imagining, you know, and entertaining these thoughts like your life's going to be perfect if you, you know. But anyway, I like to look at it like, when I was a kid, brought up on the streets of New York, Bronx, New York, and I was free, you know, like this age here. I could make choices, and I don't know, I had dreams and hopes, and I used to talk to people about purpose and direction and all kinds of stuff. I was free, and then, you know, by the age of 14, 13, drugs started coming into the neighborhood and started drinking and drugging. And that made me feel good. I thought this was heaven, man. I thought, wow, I found the power to reach my dreams. You know, this is it. You know, because once I took that drug and I walked into the corner candy store, I could talk to that girl, man, like, whoa, the kid is here. What do you want to know? It's like I thought I knew everything. And, I come from a neighborhood. Everybody come up to the corner. They go, yo, what's happening? I'm hip. What is happening? Yo. What's happening? And you know why we all ask what's happening? We didn't have a clue. So this stuff made me feel good. I got loose. I got confident. I felt good on drugs, man. I felt good. So that's why the next day I was looking for him again. And as you say, you know, like you guys were talking, you get caught up and like 20 years later, you're wondering what happened to your life, you know. What happened to me was, you know, because that stuff, like you feel, it's fun. Like there's three stages. The first stage is, let me take it from this angle. First stage is fun. You're going up. Whoa, I found gold. And then it's like fun and some problems. And then it's problems. You know, it's like that's all there is problems. So I got into, you know, what happened to me, simply, you know, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. What happened was I got into bondage. I was like in a jail that I created. And alcohol and drugs created for me, and guilty, shameful. I start blaming everybody for everything. Just yelling at people. Get the fuck, you know, you're the problem. I didn't even know how to look at myself. You know, and some great philosopher, I don't know if it was Socrates, said the unexamined life is not even worth living. Who knew how to examine yourself? I didn't have a clue. I had no blueprint for life. I didn't know what I was doing. So this stuff got me like I was in prison. Irritable, restless, discontent, yelling at people, blaming everybody. I had a soul sickness you wouldn't believe. Well, you know what I'm talking about. And then guys like this came along and offered me a choice to recover. What? You mean there's a way out of here? Yeah, there's a way out. And you got the key. I got the key? Yeah, the cell opens from the inside. It does? Who the hell knew that? I say, we'll get you back to freedom, a freedom of excellence. We'll teach you stuff you never knew. So, like somebody said just like in here a minute ago, I think it was Mike, he said, I live in the room, I live in AA, or I live in NA. I live in the program. I live in the room. You know, like that's the way I live. I live in here. And I bring it outside. It's not like I live outside and this is an activity I do. That's not it for me. 48 years, I'm having a ball. I live with guys like this. Look at how much fun he is. Steve guy, this guy's the most generous guy I met, you know, ever met. I'm just a guy from, you know, I'm not an expert or a scholar or a teacher or anything like that. I'm talking loud because I want you to hear me. I'm just a student. I'm a student. I want to learn. You know, I pick up things in a room. I always pick up something and I kind of, that I hear that I say, I need that. You know, like Tommy just said something, Mike said something, Lewis, it reinforced my belief system just now because I said, wow. You know, because I'm not in, you know, I need that. And I come from a neighborhood, a macho Italian neighborhood, you know, in the Bronx. And everything was reputation. Everything was respect. It had nothing to do with character. Because we didn't even know how to spell the word. It just like how you appeared. Yo, you know, like somebody was saying it. I think Mike was saying it. You know, it's like all this outside. Like I had no inner life. It was all like how I presented myself. You know, it was very shallow. I was like a thin veneer of a man. You know, like I had nothing behind it. My feet were firmly planted on a cloud. And, you know, if I could get a girl like Mike, that would make every... Like, I never thought of, like, getting a disease or getting... You know, like, I'm just saying, you know, like, I never thought of, you know, I'm going to get a farm with horses. My wife would always go, who's going to clean the shit, you know? Like, I never thought of, like, the stuff behind the, you know, what I was dreaming, you know? I think, I always thought of, just the thing, what's on the top, you know? I never saw the commitment. What? Commitment? Give me a break. I got married. She got married. I didn't get married. I was like, I was there. But, you know, whoa, I was like, there was no commitment. I didn't even know what it was. I had no idea. You know, God forbid I should close the door and make a commitment. No, it's like I had to leave the door open in case something exciting walked by. I didn't want to miss anything, you know. Whoa, who knew that closing the door would free? I know that sounds ridiculous, but it frees you. I had everything in reverse. It was like, you would think like, wow, because I'm from New York. Structure, formality, discipline. Get the fuck out of here. What are you kidding me? I would stop my freedom. I wanted to do anything. No, I thought license was freedom. You know, doing anything you want, especially when you weren't, you know, you didn't have any, you know, you weren't concerned about your wife, your country, God, your kids, your family, nobody. You know, I didn't have to, it was just all about me. Anyway, brought up in this macho Italian neighborhood, raised on the streets, my parents were like emotional 13-year-olds. All they did was, they didn't drink. They didn't drug. My father didn't carouse. They didn't even drink coffee. They didn't smoke. They just argued 24 hours a day. They came from alcoholic backgrounds. My father came from an alcoholic background. My mother. So they really didn't know how to do life. All they did was argue. My father never had a real job. I tell you, he was a great guy. I loved the guy. He had great qualities, but working wasn't one of them. You know, he would dive off the City Island Bridge. He would paint. He would walk on his hands on the rooftops, on the edge of the rooftops. He was like a guy in a circus. I don't know, but he wasn't a father. The guy was like I loved his rebellious kind of deal. You know, my uncles would come home. They were cops. They were electricians. They were construction workers. And my father would sit on the stoop and he'd go, suckers. You know, he would like to antagonize people. He didn't drink, but he was nuts. He was like, I didn't work today. You guys had to work. You know, he's like a little kid. You know, if you bought him an ice cream cone, everything was fine. My parents weren't religious. My mother was super responsible, man. She took to trains, to buses, to, you know, downtown. She worked hard. And I don't know. I guess when I got to jump ahead, I think now that I look back on it, I must have picked up the best of both of them. My father's creativity and my mother's work ethic, you know, once I got sober. So I was blessed with that. And I come from a neighborhood. Mount Carmel Catholic Church was in the center, the hub of Little Italy up there, you know. And every time I'd walk past the church, the Monsignor would, you know, he was standing out there with a long gown, you know, a black gown. And he would call me, he would walk up and down saying his prayers, talking to the people in the neighborhood. And this guy was a saint, now that I look back on it. The guy was a saint in the making. He would call me over, he'd say, Dion, what's this move? I was like 15, you know, I had my collar up, I was like James Dean. I don't know, a lot of you kids don't know who James Dean was, but he was like the coolest, you know, he died at 24, but he was like the coolest dude in the 50s, you know. Great actor. And this movie, Rebel Without a Cause, was out, and Monsignor would call me. He'd say, Dion, come over here. What's this movie, Rebel Without a Cause? I'd say, Monsignor, James Dean, it's a cool movie. Monsignor, yo. You know, I featured myself like the rebel king of the neighborhood, you know. And Monsignor would say, Dion, rebel with a cause. Don't rebel without a cause. Rebel for the truth. I'd say, oh, thanks, Monsignor. I needed that. Thanks. And I walk away and I'm thinking, what the fuck? The truth. What's the truth? You know, walk away. Next time I come by, I say, Dion, come over here. Yo, come over here. What makes a man happy? I'd say, yo, Monsignor, what makes a man happy? This girl, Susan, moved down from Vermont. Monsignor. She, and I'm married to this girl today, but Monsignor, this girl, she's a righteous fox, Monsignor. You don't know, if I could get a date with Susan, if I could get a J200 guitar, you know, the Jumbo Gibson, Monsignor, if I could get a hit record, Monsignor, if I could get a T-Bird, Monsignor, I'd be one happy dude, Monsignor. Say, no, Dion, the virtuous man is a happy man. St. Thomas Aquinas. Oh, Monsignor, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, thanks, Monsignor, thanks. Thanks for that. I'll see you later. And I'd be walking away and I'm going, what the freak is virtue? Virtue? What the hell is virtue? I had no idea what it was. I thought he had a cold, like virtue, you know? I didn't know what the hell. So I'm telling him, I'm thinking of that for a week. The next time I see him, I say, Monsignor, what's virtue? And it's the wrong question, because now I'm like talking to him for 20 minutes, you know? I still remember it. It's a habitual and firm disposition to do the good. Yeah, right. I was really looking to do the good, you know? God. So anyway, I was trying to become an altar boy when I was about 12. Something happened in the church. I don't want to get into it, but I said, I'm not going there. I'm not going inside there. That's the end of that. You know, I rejected it. Put it on the bottom of the list, you know, because the lure of the streets, the cool of the gangs, because when Monsignor was talking to me, you know, the guys were across the street. Ralphie Moach, Joe Beebe Eyes, you know, Frankie Yunk Yunk, Spike, you know, all those guys. They were like across the street, you know. So, you know, that kind of dragged me away. But at a young age, I realized I had a gift, like, to write songs. So my mother got me this guitar, and I started writing these songs. And I got really, like, hung up. I heard this guy on the radio one day. His name was Jimmy Reed. He was a blues singer. Guy was un-freaking-bull. It changed my life. Then I heard Hank Williams. He was like a great communicator. But I thought, and he taught me how to live. He used to write these songs that I just got caught up in it. It was like a passion. And I found out I could write a song. And what it would do was I would make sense of the whole world within 3 minutes. You know, I could write a song like, here I am, girl, standing in the rain, going round inside a hurricane. Baby, I want to ride with you. Don't you know how a good man feels? My mind feels like it ain't got no driving wheel. Baby, I want to ride with you. You know, and then I'd say, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, let's go together. Baby, I want to ride with you. I looked here, I looked there, I looked everywhere. There's no way out of here. Baby, I want to ride with you. And then at the end, you say something, a few more verses. Then you go, everybody's got to make a change sometime. My heart has turned towards the sunshine. Baby, I want to ride. And I'd feel good. I'd say, the whole world would make sense within a three. I'd make a little story for myself, and I felt safe. And I'd play it for the guys in the neighborhood, and they'd love it. They'd say, do that again. And they'd call more guys over. Look at this song. You know, and I felt like some kind of big deal, you know, and I would do that stuff. But it almost gave me a handle to reality, you know, like some kind of, like, you know, like something I could hold on to while I was crazy using drugs on the, you know, because first time drugs came into the neighborhood, I got in a room with a few guys. We used a little of this, a little of that. We drank some vodka on top of it. I mean, I walked out of that apartment down the center of the street of Crotona Avenue in the Bronx on the White Line with the tenement buildings on each side. And I felt like I was running for office. You know, I was like, yes. I was like 14. I'm like, yes, I'm here. It was like I was walking in, you know, I'm walking down the street like, you want to vote for me? The kid got, you know, I got this. I got it, you know. Ask me anything, I'll tell you, you know. That's how nuts I was. So, but I didn't. I was like feeling good, you know. And, you know, let me just tell you the real deal, and then I'll kind of go on with the story. But the real deal is when you don't have God in your life, it's like you're not plugged in. I didn't know this when I came to AA. I had no idea what they were talking about because I didn't know God from a hole in the wall. But I was like I wasn't plugged into the power, you know, and my... I'm just going to... like talk about what happened in AA when I came in, then I'll move on. But this guy came over to me and he became my sponsor. And he started telling me, Dion, the most courageous thing a man can do is open his heart to his creator. You know, I don't know, it sounded all right, you know, and then I start thinking my creator, maybe created my eyes to see and he sees me, maybe created my ears to hear and he hears me, maybe he created, gave me life and he has a plan for me. Like these guys were telling me, God has a plan and a purpose for your life. And come on, I was trying to figure this out. I was trying to figure out how to figure it out. That's how crazy I got, you know. But what my sponsor told me at the beginning has become very true in my life. He said, when you don't have God in your life, take God out of the equation. Now you got to fill up on something. So, and you heard it from, you know, Mike and Tommy and Lewis. You heard they all said it. It's you got to fill up on either money, pleasure, power, or honor. And those are the four great substitutes. Like the wealth is just money. You got to get money, you know, to do stuff. And the pleasure, that was like the sex, drugs, rock and roll. I wanted to feel good all the time. And I used women to feel good. I used people to feel good. You know, I'd use women to feel good. And I wanted to feel good all the time. That's crazy. I know it's maybe that's good for a 9-year-old or a 12-year-old, but once you start growing up, it's like it's a crazy idea. You know, it's a very it'll if you don't know life is difficult, you'll end up in a hospital or jail. You know, it's anyway, power. You know, the idea of like if you couldn't control somebody, you talked about them. You talked about them, or you kissed their ass, either one. But if you couldn't control them, there was nothing in between. That was my mode of operation. You either control somebody, and you had them in some kind of way you could control them and do stuff for you, or you talked about them, they're a son of a bitch, or you kissed their ass when you're around. There was nothing, there was no life in between that. Nothing. I had nothing. I didn't even know how to do life. And then the honor, I was big on honor, big. Forget the other three, those were mixed in, but honor was a big thing to me. Approval, the need to be right, the need to win, the need to be better, the need to, I had all these needs, you know, what are you talking about? Me, I'll kick, you know, I'll get in your face, you know, you know, all the, I don't know what the hell I was even, you know, I just had to be right, you know. And this isn't a good way to live, you know. So what happened was I was trying to fill up on this stuff. And I got the stuff. I got the money. I got the girl. I got the position. And I wasn't happy. There was something missing. And I'm thinking, you know, this low-grade depression sets in. What do you do? You know? What the hell do you do? I got the girl in my dream. I love Susan, this girl that moved down from Vermont. I love this girl. But I'm not committed to her. I'm not like I'm crazy. What do you do? I know you need more wealth, pleasure, power, and honor. Yeah, I need a little more. Maybe that'll do it. So you keep, you know, you're into the addiction of more. So I'm trying to fill up on this stuff. I'm trying to get successful. I'm trying to satisfy myself. And there's really no satisfaction. Nothing satisfying me, you know. It got like a fight, like Tommy was saying. It's just, you start fighting. You know, it's just like, you know, there's no exit. You know, you're just going around the loop. You're doing the same. It's boring. It's boring. There's nothing to live, die for. You're into yourself 100%. You know, that's what I was doing. So I was kind of like in a hell of my own, taking these drugs, taking out, you know, more and more alcohol to feel good, more of this, more of that. I got to get more money. I got to get more pleasure. I got to get more. I'm arguing with people. I'm blaming people. Basically, I'm in hell. for like from 63 to 69, 1963 to 1969. It was the bleakest, darkest, most emotional period of my life. I had a soul sickness, irritable, restless, discontent, you know, blaming everybody for everything. That's the way junkies do life. They blame people, you know, to get involved in their life, they blame them. And there's a lot of good people around us. They love us and they're trying to help us. We could destroy them. We just destroy. We don't give a shit. We destroy them. But I met this guy Jack. I moved down to Florida trying to get away from New York, the streets and the drugs, the hospitals and the craziness and the chaos and the pain. And I moved down here, and I moved in with Jack, my father-in-law, who I didn't know and I didn't want to know because he was clean. And I didn't know. He was in AA, 12 years. And we were going to live with him, my wife and I, until we found the place. And I'd get up in the morning, and he'd be at the breakfast table with these light blue eyes, they're sparkling, and he'd be reading his prayer book. And eating his eggs. And he'd say, "Hey, good morning, D. How you doing? Listen to those birds." And I'd say, "Birds? What the hell's he, you know?" My mind was spinning. I didn't hear no birds. And he would do that every morning. Listen to those birds, D. Listen, you know. He'd hear the crickets at night. Wow, it's so peaceful. And I'd think, this guy's out of his freaking mind. And, you know, where could I get something? I'd go run down the street, you know. But he talked me into going to a meeting with him. I'm trying to make it short. I went to a meeting with him, and my life changed. I don't know what happened at that meeting. I heard something that I was looking for in my life. Guys that were talking about their fears. They were talking about everything I was looking to not talk about. You know, stuff I was trying to hide, they were talking about. Their fears, their relationships, how their selfishness, their dishonesty, their inconsideration. And I thought, you know, it was like I knew honest when I heard it. I knew these guys. I never heard anything like this. Nobody on the streets talked about serenity and peace. Nobody. I never heard anybody in the Bronx say, "Hey, you know, you got any serenity or you got any peace going?" You know. And they told me, everybody was telling me, you know, if you find God, He'll cure your problem. It was in the book. So I went back to the place, got on my knees before I went to bed. I just tried it. I said, "God, I need your help. I don't know what I'm doing." I was at the end of my life on my terms. My terms sucked. So I just said a prayer. And when I got off my knees, something changed, and I knew it. I don't know what. God must have just touch me or something, but I changed. And I started coming to meetings with Jack. I started working the steps. Now I had a design for living and a guy to talk to who I trusted. And I don't want to tell you why I trust him because, I'll tell you, he was running the Balmoral Club in Miami, and he had like 30 guys working for him. And we're outside one day, and I'm ready to leave. And we're at the front of this private club. And a Lincoln Mark IV pulls up. Big white Lincoln Mark IV with a Continental wheel on the back. You guys weren't even born yet. It was a beautiful car. And this young couple got out, and they said, "Jack, you don't know, our son Michael is doing so great. He's doing so wonderful, Jack. He's in college. He treats us with such respect. We got our son back. Sober 2 years. Jack, we love you. Thank you, Jack, what you did for Michael. It's a miracle. Jack, please, Jack. We went to the showroom. We we bought this car for you, and we want you to have this car. So, Jack, it's a token of our appreciation. Please take this car. And the keys are dangling there. And I'm thinking, take the car, Jack. And he tells him, I can't take that car. He says, this program is freely given to us. I freely give it away. Ah, I didn't know what I was. This was something totally that I never saw before. And I couldn't tell you what happened in my mind, but I could tell you now, I could define it. I totally trusted this guy. I knew he didn't have, like, an agenda. He didn't have a business that he was looking to pad his park. Nothing. He said, give it to the gardener over there. He said, he could use it. Please, if you want to do something. I'm thinking, Jack, I'm your son-in-law. Whoa. Wait a minute. Let's talk this out. Wait a second. You know, I got that, you know, dope fiend mind going. Anyway, I started working the program, and I started seeing how insane I was. And, you know, my definition of insanity is believing a lie. And I think anybody who walks in this room believes in a lie in their belief system somewhere. And you can't live your life like that. It doesn't work. It's like trying to go to Chicago and thinking, well, I'll go this way. No, Chicago's that way. You better get a map. You know, it's like having, you know, nah, I think I'll go this way. Nah. And that's what I did before I came into AA. So I went through the steps with guys like this, and I had a spiritual awakening. With me, it was, I had, like, Christ showed up with me. It was like, whoa. It was like, I never been the same. It's like I said a prayer. I said, God, it would be nice to be closer to you. All of a sudden, you know, I understood stuff I never understood before. And I felt a forgiveness down to the soles of my feet. I've been free ever since. It's like I was telling you, you got to fill up on wealth, pleasure, power, and honor. Well, once I got that awakening, God starts shaping my desire for wealth, pleasure, power, and honor. I had nobody to tell me how much I needed or how to do it. I had no, I was like, it was me wanting to, my selfish self-centeredness, I lied, I cheated, everything to get this. I didn't know. But he started saying, you know, the program, my sponsor, God in my life started discipline or shaping or showing me how to do life, honestly. And this gave me true freedom, a freedom of excellence and a joy. And, you know, you would think that structure would confine you and hold you back. You're not free anymore. Well, it's precisely the thing that frees you. It's crazy. I never knew that. Nobody taught me that. It's like I could go on. Let me give you one example, because it's important. Because if you get 7 guitar players in a room, you get Eric Clapton and Segovia or John, or I don't know, John Mayer or Jimi Hendrix, whoever you want, throw Chuck Berry, whatever you want. You get 7 guys in a room playing guitar, best guitar players, you know, and play together, and they play anything they want. You got total chaos. But if you give them a scale, there's 7 notes in a scale, harmonics, the beat, the tempo. You could express yourself within that structure totally free. You just listen to jazz guitars. But they're within the thing. They're within the structure. You go off that structure, you're in the ocean, you're off the cliff, you're in the fire, you're in the quicksand. Yeah, you know, and you end up in AA going, how do you do this, you know? And that's what happened to me. But I learned everything right here. I learned that surrender wasn't a bad word. It was running to something, not running away from something. Surrendering to a loving, beautiful group of men, God, a community, the beauty, the truth, the goodness. And I have three daughters who love me. They were born to me in the program. And they never seen me drink or drug. I was very fortunate. You know, I wasn't like a lot of guys. They gained their families back. They gained their trust. But I didn't, you know, not that I was perfect. I was crazy, sober and crazy. But nevertheless, they loved me and my family's together. And I'm still learning. And that's why I'm here, you know. I love this guy. I love you guys. I pray you keep coming back. And thank you for listening to me, man.